Short disclaimer. This podcast is in no way affiliated with the Stars production or Diana Gabaldon. All views expressed are solely our own. Welcome to the Outlander podcast,
where the men are kilted,
the women are winsome,
and the whiskey is neat.
Welcome to episode 189 of the Outlander podcast. I'm Ginger.
And I'm Summer, and we are in love with all things Outlander. This week, we will be discussing chapters 36 and 37. We will start off with chapter 36, entitled Practical and Applied Witchcraft.
So, they arrive at Lallybroch, that is, Claire and young Ian, after dark. When they arrive, Jenny is of course happy to see her son again. She asked where he'd gone. Jenny hadn't seen Claire behind him as they'd entered. Her reaction, when she sees her, is one of shock. Diana writes, "If my resurrection from the dead had disconcerted her, this second appearance stunned her." Unquote. Jenny isn't happy with her son. She says he's the cuckoo's child, not meant to be hers. And then she sends him to bed. So she's a little insulting of him. She's there. Claire is there to look after Jamie. And that's what she's going to do. Jenny points Claire toward the parlor door. She does let her know that Leary is gone. Jamie was on a camp bed on the floor in front of the fire. He was sleeping. Claire warms her hands and felt his forehead. He was burning with fever. So along with the title of this chapter, we have some things Diana is giving us. That Claire is known as or considered a witch, a white lady. That she has some kind of her own magic, which we don't know too much about yet, but she is called to be a healer. Now, Diana refers to the Highland superstition of hearing water drop in a household before someone dies. So all this is a kind of magical Mr. Mistopheles stuff.
It's not about cats. Don't make this about cats.
Girl, it just came out with magic. Claire thinks about all of the responsibilities and or ties she's been unburdened of late. Frank's death meant she was free of obligation to him. Brianna had let her mother go in her own way. The hospital board had done so in their own way. And Joe Abernathy had helped her with some of her own letting go. She recognizes that she'd had time to prepare her journey and the decision to return to Jamie. Jamie, on the other hand, had had none of this. No warning, no choice. She recognizes he was not one to abandon his responsibilities. As she was traveling again toward the stones, quote, "Nothing had slowed my journey but the hope that Jamie would come after me," unquote. And it wasn't until young Ian had said, "He's dying," that she realized she wasn't being fair. Eileen P. writes, "Jamie and Jenny might be known for their tempers, but Claire can give them a run for their money. At least Claire eventually cools down by analyzing the situation. She tries to see it from Jamie's point of view. She is also honest with herself. She wasn't so much fleeing Jamie as hoping he would come for her." Now, I love Diana's analogy of the key. She writes, quote, "My marriage to Jamie had been for me like the turning of a great key, each small turn setting in play the intricate fall of tumblers within me. Bree had been able to turn that key as well, edging closer to the unlocking of the door of myself. But the final turn of the lock was frozen until I had walked into the print shop in Edinburgh and the mechanism had sprung free with a final decisive click. The door was not ajar, the light of an unknown future through its crack, but it would take more strength than I had alone to push it open." Unquote. Jamie is then awake and he says to her, "You came back then. I knew you would." So he's talking and talking of love, how he'd missed her. And then he says, "It will not be long, Sassenach. Then I shall touch you once more. I do long to touch you." Unquote. And then he realizes she's real.
This is the second time since yep. she's returned that he realizes she's real.
Exactly. He sits up too fast, and in doing so, pain shoots through his injured arm. He asks, what in the heck? I mean, in a very colorful language, some really interesting things about pig swiving, what she's doing there. She doesn't understand what's going on. Or at that, like why he's kind of freaked out. Turns out that he hadn't sent young Ian. So was he just being as stubborn as she was? He says he didn't want her back just because he felt pity for him. He did not want her to come back just out of feelings of pity. Jenny had dug the ball out of his side, and he asks Claire to stay with him at least for a little bit. Then we learn about the true magic Claire had brought with her through the stones. Jamie had a fever, and it needed to be treated. Quote, there was one item I had carried on my person at all times, not trusting it to the vagaries of travel, unquote. I love this scene where she lays out the syringes. She prepares the penicillin and tells him to roll onto his good side. He says, are you suffering a sudden attack of lustfulness?
Well, because that's after she talks about his butt.
Yeah.
She's like, your backside hasn't changed in 20 years. And he's like, well, now there's yours, but yours isn't hanging out right now.
Lisa T. writes, this sudden attack of lustfulness is so funny, but it also ties in nicely with the previous chapters of Jamie being tossed and subsequently having his arse look like that of a baboon. So Claire swabs alcohol over his bum. Jamie says, quote, that's a very nice make of brandy, but I'm more accustomed to apply it at the other end, unquote. Oh my gosh. Quote, would you care to tell me why jabbing pins in my arse is going to help my arm? Jamie needs to watch this. I mean, he doesn't need to, obviously, but it just reminded me that this whole anatomy thing, like he's like, oh, how is this going to help that? Well, obviously there's no answer to give him. Well, the answer is what she gives him later. But I was just about to say, even if it was not really apropos, that Jamie needs to watch this anatomy video or an anatomy show I found on accident last night on Amazon Prime. It's called Anatomy for Beginners. And you think, oh, you know, you learn about the body, you learn about anatomical naming, you know, the planes of the body, etc. No, episode one begins with the removal of the skin of a cadaver.
Oh, it delightful. Goes
that quick. Oh, and the cadaver's standing, like they have him propped up, obviously. He's passed, but he's on like
he's
a
standing.
He is. They have him in a standing position.
Well, I'm and laughing then, at you. He's like, well, they have him propped up. He's obviously passed. Well, he's a cadaver.
And they remove the skin, like, no joke. This thing, it just like it there's no peeling. It like falls off. I've never seen it. And he said, no, there
can you stop?
Okay. So then they take it off and they hang it up on like a rack. Oh God!
Because he's got to make a purse later. What?
They hang it up like as if the skin were standing, just like the dude is propped up. They hang it on a thing like he's up against. They're trying to make a point that, you know, oh how lovely this is, and like, okay, you guys lost me. It's yeah. So that was an interesting show that I was horrified, but fascinated.
You watched the whole thing, didn't you?
No, not all of it because I had to go to bed. I was tired, but. It was fascinating, but it was a little horrifying. Not because it's anatomy. I don't think that's gross. It was just the whole, like, oh, the first thing, but we have to remove the skin. I was like, really? Really? And a friend of ours said, huh, here I was thinking anatomy, the first episode would be like, here's the arm. This is your foot. I'm like, yeah, you would have thought, huh? Sorry, that made me laugh so much. So then we get back to the germs. Quote, little beasts too small to see, unquote. Claire tells Jamie that he'll get another shot every 4 hours for the next day. And he says, I should have let them burn you 20 years ago.
Right?
Oh my gosh. Anne S. writes, I loved when she pulls out the penicillin and syringes. That was a reveal I was not expecting at all or would have not thought possible. It makes me think what else she has hidden in those skirts. That is what I have been saying like the last month or more. So the whole thing of like the peanut butter, I mean, that's great. Since chapter 24, and she comes back. We know she has money, some change. We know she had some sandwiches. We know she had obviously a dress, a funny dress, but what she did was the best she could. But to me, I'm just wondering, I mean, I don't think she has like a Mary Poppins bag where it's like endless stuff coming out, but I am just so curious what else she has. Obviously, penicillin, and it'll be used up in at some point, but I agree. I have said this for weeks and weeks and weeks now. I wonder what else Claire has with her, even if it's not like life-saving. I'm just curious what little thing she has with her. Lisa T. writes, Claire is then tending to Jamie. As I said in the previous chapter, Claire and Jamie could not go on behaving as the last 20 years of their lives hadn't happened, but they can begin again as they try, as they have before. In Outlander, Claire first meets Jamie when she has to tend his wounds to his arm and shoulder. She saves his life from a terrible fever after he is raped and tortured by BJR. In that case, just as in this one, they can't move forward as though nothing had happened. They are both irrevocably changed, but they can begin again. Jamie's injury is reminiscent of his first injury in Outlander, where it all began. Eileen P. writes, excellent forethought, bringing penicillin, Claire. This reminds me of when you're asked what three things you'd bring if you were stranded on a desert island. Just asking, if I bring my Nook loaded with the entire Outlander series, is that considered one item? For her time-traveling journey, Claire has brought the penicillin, oh, here she goes, photos of Brie, and a peanut butter and jelly sandwich. Brilliant choices. Martina P. writes, despite threats to both young Ian and Jamie, Claire can't deny her medical skills to one who needs them. As Jamie does, in Fever Dreams, Jamie, who we have seen so often with Claire, say easily what is truly in his heart. At the end of DIA, Jamie tells Claire that he knows she will have to live without a heart, never expecting he will have to do the same. Jamie has always been adept, even a very successful liar across his eventful life, but not with Claire. This is more challenging to her. As he speaks of his true heart, his fear of losing her again, his endless love, his grief. Lisa T. writes, Jamie mentioned earlier that Claire brought him through his fever by witchcraft, and this reference to the trial, while a wee bit of a joke, also lets the reader know that while Jamie respects and acknowledges Claire's healing gifts, he is still mystified by them.
And now, on to chapter 37, entitled, What's in a Name?
Lisa T. writes, the title is from Romeo and Juliet. What's in a name? A rose by any other name would smell as sweet. It refers to the many different names that Jamie uses, who he is, to different people. Claire is staying by Jamie's side the rest of the night. When she went into the kitchen for a bite, she saw the maid had made a space for her. So Jenny had told them of her presence. There was now tension between her and Jenny, and if she was going to stay, there'd have to be some explaining. And Diana writes, quote, I was going to stay, unquote. Yay, Claire's done. After Jamie wakes up, he has realized that she's there, and she says, quote, all right, let's hear it then. In other words, spill your guts. The way he goes on about the syringes is hysterical, but she won't be sidetracked. We learn the story of Jamie and Leary. Now, after Jamie had come back from England and from Willie, he says that his family was happy to see him, but he'd changed, and they'd changed. He had been gone so long that though he was there, he wasn't home. Anne S. writes, we see Jamie's heartbreaking loneliness and loss of purpose as the driver and his reason behind marrying Leary. When he says, quote, I was here, but not home, unquote. That brings a tear prick. Claire feels the pool of Lallybroch. Quote, I could feel the pool of it around me, the house, the family, the place itself. I, who couldn't remember a childhood home, felt the urge to sit down here and stay forever, enmeshed in the thousand strands of daily life, bound securely to this bit of earth, unquote. Now, Sam, that reminds me of the line, quote, please, sir, might I have a bit of earth? Do you remember where that's from?
Secret Garden.
Yeah. Oh my God. I didn't know if you'd get that. Very good.
I'm brilliant. From the
only reason I knew that was because of the musical, not the book. Way to go for musicals. Jenny had tried to persuade Jamie to marry again many times, ever since the days following Culloden. But now he listened. Leary had married a man named Hugh Mackenzie, who had died at Culloden. And then she'd married Simon McKimmy, who was the father to her two daughters, Marsali and Joan. Simon was arrested for treason and died in prison. The crown tried to take the estate, his estate, but Ned Gowan had gone and spoken for Leary and saved the house. Ned Gowan. I can't believe it. I think Ned Gowan's the witch. To be alive still? And he still lives in Castle Leigh. Ned had mentioned Leary to Jenny. Here, Jamie remembers that Hogmanay, where he'd met Leary at the house. We do find out what happened to the stuff in Jamie's sporran when he went to prison. He had only left wee Sonny behind. And he collected him now. Leary had found him and asked him to dance with her. And he had taken her hand and his first steps in pursuit of himself. They had gone out and taken part in the custom, where a single woman spins about and walks through the door with eyes closed and then spins again, and the first thing they see would be the man they'd marry. Of course, Leary saw Jamie. She needed a husband, her kids needed a father, and he needed something. So they married, and he'd moved to Balregan. A year later, he'd moved out and gone to Edinburgh.
How much do you want to bet she cheated?
On Jamie?
No, at the little testy thing where she spun around three times and put her eyes on him.
Oh, I think she cheated. I think she knew where he was.
I bet she cheats at pin the tail on the donkey. She cheats at whatever the hell this Hogmanay game is. She's a cheater.
It was just an unfortunate situation. Nothing was wrong, but it wasn't right. Leary always was crying. Something must be his fault, he thought. He says to Claire that she never did that. Leary was afraid of him. He could never heal her hurt, and that's why he left. Claire goes to get him some tea, and he asks to put his head in her lap. As she goes to reach for the next ampule of penicillin, she could tell that Jamie was in a mood. Oopsie. A good mood, a really good mood. He asks her if she knows what it's like to try to be so close to someone but not completely know them. Of course she does. That had been her life with Frank. Lisa T. writes, later that night, the rest of the house was quiet, everyone safely in bed, and there was no sound but the hissing of the fire, sigh of the wind, and the scratch of Ellen's rosebush at the window, insistent as the demands of love, unquote. As though Ellen was welcoming and watching over her son. And then back to the meaning of the title. Jamie lists all the names he's had. Uncle, Milor, Sir, McDew, Mackenzie, Malcolm, Jamie Roy. Quote, but here in the dark with you, I have no name. Unquote. Claire bends to kiss him and says, I love you. Lisa T. writes, this is a variation on the blade of grass speech. When Jamie is talking about his soul, here he is also talking about it, that nameless, deepest part of you where your soul lives. He has been rootless, a ghost in his own home, but now with Claire, his soul and hers are alive, safely and finally, after a long voyage apart, home. Eileen P. writes, both Jamie and Claire were adrift without each other. Claire found at least a part of herself by becoming a doctor, and she had Brianna. But Jamie had experienced loss after loss during his separation from Claire. Returning to Lallybroch after Hellwater, he was trying to find himself. Jenny orchestrated Leary being present during this time, so Jamie married her. She needed him, and quite frankly, he needed to be needed. However, the marriage didn't work. Jamie moved out in less than a year. Jamie thinks something abusive happened to Leary in her previous marriages. Perhaps, but I think she might have rejected him because she knew he didn't love her the way he loved Claire and still loved Claire. Martina P. writes, penicillin breaks the fever, but other things need breaking down. Despite the need for explanations from several people, Claire has made her choice to stay. Jamie is awake now, and Claire wants answers. For him, after so many losses, Claire, position, prison, Hellwater, although not everything about that is mentioned here, in family and at Lallybroch, for possibly the first time, Jamie was unable to find his place or a role that could define himself. He's lost, and Jenny's concern led to an invitation to twice widowed with small girls and a property to manage, Leary. In the book, no one else knew her role in the trial except herself and Claire. Over Hawkmanay, acquaintances are rekindled. I wonder if with Leary, Jamie doesn't have to pretend to be anyone else. Her view of him is likely skewed, but she perhaps knows little about what he's gone through. It's too late, say, to thank Leary as a schemer or designer of this meeting or even her initial expectations. She has gone through a hell of a lot as well. She needs help around her property, and Jamie needs something meaningful to do. Jamie sees the match as utilitarian. They can help each other. We don't know what Leary really thought or hoped at the time. I don't think it's as simple as, quote, at least I've got him, unquote. I doubt she would have so rebuffed Jamie's physical contact so much, sexual or not. Clearly, reality can't match with fantasy or hopes for either of them. Like the breakdown of Frank and Claire's marriage to civility and necessity, no one is really to blame, although it's very arguable that the cause is Jamie and Claire. I have a lot of compassion for Book Leary. Her life has been one of no real control or agency. Two dead husbands, one of whom it's implied was abusive, beyond what was expected then, if not now. When she has a chance with someone she knows and trusts, like Jamie, she is very sensible and rightly takes it. Claire sees their common experiences, the similarities of life with Frank, the strain and stresses of living with long unmet emotional needs, of playing a part, of not being with the person you really love. We are used to this in the book, hearing Claire talk about finding her true self again with Jamie, and I find it jarring to hear Jamie speak of it now. He has so often found a role or given himself an identity to mask his true self, a very valid and useful self-protection strategy. It's only now that in the dark with Claire, that his true self, that small creature inside him, is free to just be. It is himself, it's freeing, and it's enough. And it's here as the key to the door of Claire's true self takes another turn, and with Jamie's confessions, the door opens. Claire can say for the first time since her return, I love you.
I feel like Leary roars back into the story almost unchanged. To the side of, in the first book, it's, he's mine, you can't have him. And it's a prior claim that she feels she had on him, and that led to her trying to kill Claire with the witch trial. And now Claire returns, she shows up, get away from him, you witch, he's mine. And then when she doesn't get her way, she tries to kill Jamie. So it's I feel like she's just doing all the same things.
She would have tried to kill Claire, but Claire was gone.
Oh, I'm sure.
I agree with you. I think she took the one thing she could, which was Jamie.
Right. I don't feel like as a character she's grown at all. I don't care if she's got her sad, moody moments where she, you know, got everything she wanted and still wasn't happy. That's pretty standard. Everyone thinks that's having that one thing in their life is going to make everything complete, and then they get it and they're still broken. Mm-hmm. You know, you cannot rely on other people to make you happy, because clearly even getting everything she thought she always wanted was not enough.
I still think, yes, it's an unfortunate character. I don't know if I call her tragic. I mean, I guess you could call her kind of a tragic character, but I don't know. I definitely feel for the book character. We probably shouldn't even talk about the TV character yet, but because that's a whole different shebang now. Wow. But
all I know is that right now Jenny is real close to Leary
being on par with how I feel about Leary.
Lisa T. writes, Jamie talks about being different from who you were. I think this is why he and Claire can't pick up as though nothing has happened. As I said before, they are irrevocably changed. Jamie is finally open with Claire about his life, his thoughts, and his emotions. I was a ghost, I think. Unquote.
Yes, he was. Book one.
From the beginning of Outlander. Poor Jamie. I'm not sure if he ever figures out that Leary thought that he loved her and was brokenhearted when she realized that he didn't. As old Alec pointed out, she'll be a lassie until she's 50. But then when she's 51, she'll be fine. So, what do you think, Summer? We have Claire back, Leary back, Jamie back from the almost dead. And what stands out the most to you of these last two chapters? Good or bad?
Jenny. I'm angry at freaking Jenny.
Thank you. That's what I was about to say. You're right, because Leary, you don't have to like her, but she's true to form.
Here's the thing. She's still Leary. She's the same. She hasn't changed. I'm with you. She has not changed one bit. She's exactly the character we expect her to be when she returns with full force to the book.
Because she's not changed. 51 yet.
Right.
Because she's not 51.
Jenny, however, and I don't...
Oh my gosh.
I cannot reconcile in my brain how she thinks that it's okay.
Okay, let's break it down a little bit more. So go back 20, or I guess it was 10 years. I can respect a sister, not like a sister, Jenny, Jamie's sister, a sister of someone. I can respect a sister feeling for her brother, feeling bad for him, wanting him to have that relationship or wanting, even if it's not like a love match, I can respect her and understand both of them, her wanting him to have something. And of course, that would end up helping, at least around the house, that would end up helping Leary. I can understand her wanting to push for him to get married from the time of Culloden. I can. Of course, us Jamie and Claire fans are like, how can you do that? But dude, that's her brother. As far as she knows, Claire's dead. Claire's gone. She's gone. Because Jamie, that's what Jamie says. So I can tell and I can see and I can separate that. Claire ain't there. So all this stuff about Jenny trying to marry him off, I can respect that. I can even respect her trying to marry him off to Leary because she doesn't know Jick from Jack. I don't have a problem with that. Of course, we as readers don't like him with Leary, but like you said, Leary's no different than she ever has been. But this is not a discussion of what Leary's like. This is a discussion of Jenny's performance. So I can get that she's trying to set him up. I can get that she wants him married. I can get that she does that till the cows come home. And I don't even care that she says, oh, here's Leary. But once Claire's back and she keeps her Annie into, he's culpable in this too. They keep their mouths shut and don't let her know what's going on. And they welcome her in there for snacks. And that first night, she welcomes her as a sister. And she has like
two-faced and it's backhanded and it's...
And even if she didn't... Okay, hold on a minute. I can even go as far as that. She's very happy to see Claire. Okay, let's go on with that. Fair enough. She's happy to see Claire. I don't think that was... Maybe two-faced. I don't think it was fake. I think it was real. The point at which I have a problem is... Well, I guess it was that next morning. So basically, Jenny's like, okay, she's here. I welcome her because her as a woman, I miss her, or I'm glad she's alive, whatever she was feeling. The thing that I don't get is not even that Jenny like sent her away with the horse. The thing that I don't get is Jenny was the one to tell her daughter to go tell Leary that she was there. That was a backstabbing move. From there on out, it was Jenny from the bitch, not Jenny from the Brock.
Dude, I feel like Jenny became a mean girl. And I want to know when she started only wearing pink on Wednesdays.
Huh. So, okay, here's another question. Let's say in keeping with Jenny, because we can, even if they fight, even when they do fight, even when they fight awfully, she loves her brother, period. I still believe that. And she wants the best for him and tries to protect him. I still believe that. How does that reconcile with her doing this? Is it because, whether we like it or not, is it because all she knows or all she sees is that Claire's been gone and then she shows up and she doesn't want him to go through the breakup, like the emotional thing again? Or even though she knows that Jamie hasn't been around for 8 to 9 years with Larry. I don't know what she's trying to do there. What I get, Larry can definitely make Claire leave, but she wasn't trying to reconcile anything between Jamie and Larry. So the only reason was to get Claire to turn tail and leave.
It was
the only reason.
All of it. Okay, here's the thing that you have to remember. Jenny is, it feels like she's trying to save face because she was the orchestrator behind the great debacle that was the marriage between Larry and Jamie. So she orchestrated it. She started it. She finished it. She made it happen. Right down to throwing the party. She probably made Jamie stand in a specific place and told Larry when to stop turning. So when she opened her eyes, he was standing there. My point is that at that point, Claire coming back undermines everything she's been doing. And we find out more things later that makes it even more objectionable. That being said, yeah. I feel like she is trying to make peace with her part in it and continue to try to be the hero in her own story.
By getting rid of Claire, I don't see when it's been
I know,
a
but if she gets
failure.
Right. I know. But if she gets Claire to leave before everyone knows she's back, then she didn't make her brother a bigamist. She didn't.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, do all of these other things and didn't, I don't know. I'm not agreeing with it. I still think Jenny's real, real shady.
I can go with everything you just said. I can actually go more with everything she does from that day on. Mm. Her telling Janet, her trying to, you know, get Leary and all that.
No,
and her trying to hide.
It was her being all nice. And
that's what I'm trying to say. I can go with the Jenny that does the stuff trying to save face, because to me that's real. What's not real, and I'm not saying she hates Claire, but what's not real is her being so nice to her when she gets there, because what the heck is that about? That's what I have a problem with.
I feel it's like the calm before the storm. She's like, let's have one nice moment, and then I'm before I go in and ruin it all for everyone.
Gracious. That's going to be an interesting, we're going to have to see how it turns out in the show.
So that was chapter 37. Join us next time when we discuss chapter 38, entitled, I Meet a Lawyer.
I hope it's Ned.
Who else would it be?
I don't know.
There's clearly only one lawyer in the entire series of Outlander.
Scotland.
And Scotland.
In the entire Scotland. Yeah. In the entire Scotland. Yeah. Thank you, as always, so much for listening. We look forward to our next episode. Thank you to our generous partner, Zencastr, who offers high-fidelity podcasting. Check out Zencastr and use coupon code OUTLANDER20, OUTLANDER20, for 20% off 3 months or 20% off for a year. Connect with us. Visit our website at outlanderpod.com. Find us on Facebook, facebook.com/OutlanderPod. We'd love for you to join our Facebook community at outlanderpod.com/group. Follow us on Twitter and Instagram @OutlanderPod. I dreamt it last night.